This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Sounds like President Trump, but he's not one to take credit for a lot of stuff or predict a lot of huge accomplishments. But maybe it was him. I don't know. David Schultz joins us now, professor of political science at Hamline University. How are you doing, professor?
I am doing well, and I hope you're well today, too.
Yeah, I'm not trying to get anybody mad. I'm just trying to continue on with the satire of Mardi Gras, even though it's over. Tell me, I mentioned yesterday, I'm just being honest with the audience, as I always am. Mardi Gras was an early day for me yesterday, a long day. I have a new puppy, so I didn't watch the address, and because I knew you were coming on, you would be able to give us the highlights, the lowlights, the truth, the what not so much, the exaggerations, the reactions, all that stuff. And why ruin my day? Tell me what went on at the. It wasn't a State of the Union, actually, was it, or was it?
It wasn't officially a State of the Union, but it was a state of Trump's vision of the Union, I would say, at that point. And I'll start off by saying that it was the longest speech a president has ever given before Congress. It was about an hour and 45, hour and 50 minutes. I wasn't surprised by that, because by going that long, he pushed the Democratic response out of prime time. And so whether or not that was by design or by coincidence or by happenstance, I don't know. But the way I described the speech, it was, as you were sort of doing in the intro, he was taking credit for all the things that he's claimed that he's done so far. At the same time, he was expressing his grievances for all the things in terms of what immigrants, other countries, Mexico, Canada, everybody else is doing wrong against the United States. But I think the thing that really stood out to me the most, it was a clearly partisan speech. And what I mean by that, the way he, first off, the way the Democrats didn't applaud, the Republicans did, et cetera, et cetera. But there was really no effort in part of the speech to reach out to the rest of America and to try to be kind of a reconciliatory speech. It was really Trump about himself and about the grievances that he and maybe many of his supporters still have.
But seriously, and that's why I was saying about it didn't sound like President Trump kidding around. First of all, I don't know if there was a plan, as you said, to push it in out of prime time or not, because I don't know if anybody watches the responses. I think in this day and age, it's just my unscientific opinion. If you love President Trump, you're going to watch him and cheer everything on. If you hate him, you're going to watch him like doom scrolling and just get yourself all angry. Then you're going to wait around to listen to the Democratic response and say, yeah, tell him. Or if you hate the Democrats, then you're going to listen and go, what are you talking about? Are you crazy? So I don't know anything about that. But I do know this. Love him or hate him, President Trump loves to be on television.
Yep.
He loves to have an audience. He loves to be the center of attention. And if he can hold both houses of Congress for an hour and 45 minutes, he's going to do it. He's going to stay up there until he gets tired of talking. And that's not to say it's a good thing or a bad thing. That is just an analysis. Would you not agree?
I agree. And remember, his real career was birthed on television and birthed in popular culture. He loves television as a medium. And the fact that he had the reporters, he had a lot of America, I don't know how many people have watched it yet, and we don't have any, I haven't seen any ratings, but the fact that he had that amount of attention for nearly 2 hours is exactly what he wants. And for his supporters, they loved it also in terms of 2 hours. And I'm even to say for his opponents, the people who don't like him, the fact that they could grovel, or not grovel, growl at the television set for 2 hours. Grouse, whatever we're looking at here. We want to keep it clean. Yeah, we want to keep this clean, of course. A whole bunch of things that they could do for 2 hours to vent, to maybe vent. They got what they wanted to.
Nobody threw eggs at their television, I can tell you that. First of all, because it's just a giant mess you have to clean up. Secondly, eggs are too damned expensive. Let's talk about some of the things that he said. One thing that interested me was he said that he inherited an economy that was a catastrophe. But I asked, and I wanted to get this on the record, just, and again, not to, to make any points with anybody, not to score any scores for or against anybody, but just for a fact, a baseline, if you will, I asked a very conservative economist that's our guest, where is the economy? And I asked him this the day before President Trump took office. So on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you say? Everything combined, because it's, you got the stock market, you got 401ks, you got interest rates, you got home, this, you know, all this different economic indicators. He said 8 out of 10. So I said, okay. So if that's the case, then I don't know how the president could say that he inherited an economy that was a catastrophe. Now, if you want to be factual about it, but on the other hand, I can also see where it makes sense to blame the previous administration, even though you said you were going to fix prices and you said you were going to do this. But again, to be fair, a candidate promising one thing and not doing it is hardly newsworthy either.
I think you're absolutely right. I was going to say somewhere around the 7 or 8, you know, I think where I've seen a lot of economists putting it. And I think partly what doomed Biden and eventually Harris is when they were saying the economy was great, but a lot of people were thinking about, as you pointed out, you know, milk, bread, especially eggs at this point. And he said, I'm going to bring the prices down. I'm going to address that. So if we look at that in terms of a barometer, the price of eggs is not down but up. In the last couple of days, because of the tariffs, the stock market is down. For people who are on a daily basis looking at their 401ks and that, first off, don't do it. But it doesn't look quite as good. And so on a lot of indicators right now, the economy is weaker. And I think one of the stories that also came out yesterday is that there's indications that there was some collapse in terms of the GDP in the first couple of months of this year. So a lot of things are going on that, if you want from a factual perspective, that economists are looking at the numbers, they would say the economy is weaker now than it was on January 20th or January 19th when you took office.
Somebody texted in, so you didn't watch the speech, but you're discussing it today? Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm discussing with David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University. He also teaches law. He watched the entire thing, and I didn't have to. So I don't know what point you're trying to make, 35, 36, but I read your text, so there you go. People are texting in about Democrats not applauding for cancer patients or something. I don't know. But again, you look for an enemy, you look for a hero when you watch these things, depending on what side you're on. And it has become just intensely partisan, these speeches, where the Democrats won't clap for the Republicans and the Republicans won't clap for the Democrats. 621 traffic now, WWL. All right, that's Alyssa Slotkin, a Democrat from Michigan, with the Democratic response. We're talking to David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University. Professor, two people are texting me incessantly about some moment where they had a kid with cancer or something, and I'm not, you know, we go to Children's Hospital and I can donate out of my pocket. I'm very concerned. It means a lot more to donate out of your pocket than it does to stand and applaud. What happened with a child with cancer last night?
Well, apparently last night, when talking about the child with cancer, again, I couldn't tell from looking at what station I was watching, but it doesn't look like the Democrats sort of did the applause or standing in the way the Republicans did. But again, I won't mention what station I was watching, but from what I was seeing, I just saw Trump. I saw the child. So I don't quite know what the Democrats did, but that's apparently there wasn't that kind of standing or applauding in the way that, the Republicans were doing, and there was clearly criticism. People are saying that what the Democrats don't care about children with cancer and so forth. I think people are going to interpret that moment through the eyes of whatever they have, and look at it from a different, from all their own perspectives in terms of what was going on. But clearly, some people are saying Democrats are indifferent, you know, to children with cancer.
And I would suggest, while people are tapping on the seatbelt light while the plane is losing altitude, that has what to do with the price of eggs, with groceries, with the stock market, with tariffs, with their own individual lives?
It doesn't have very much to do with anything, nor did some of the other scenes where they gave, what was it, a 10-year-old boy? What was it? They made him now, what, an eight, or like a government agent or something like that? Or they made somebody, Trump proclaimed that somebody has now been admitted to the West Point Academy. I mean, these are made for television moments. I mean, if I'm going to call it that, I mean, that's what it, again, struck me last night. It was kind of like the stay tuned for the next surprise or something like that. And, or the next big thing that's going to happen, or I don't know, so-and-so, what's that show? Price is Right. So-and-so, come on down like that, and you win the big prize or something like that. It just had that feel to it for me at parts of it in terms of how it was being orchestrated.
It's theater. All of it is, whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans.
Exactly.
Politically speaking, if you can get somebody, this has nothing to do with President Trump. I don't care if it's Obama, Clinton, Trump, pick a name.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you can get somebody to look over here and distract them by either hating somebody or worried about this, or this one didn't clap, or this one was wearing blue, or this one was wearing red, or that kind of foolishness, well, then maybe you can get their eyes off the real problems in the country that take serious decisions, serious actions, some of which you can fix, some of them you can't. And this is at the state, local level, whatever it is, state, you name it. If you can get people worried about the confusion over here, then maybe they don't worry so much about the stuff that actually concerns them that you can't fix. Accurate or not?
I think it's accurate, and it's on both parties at that point. And so yesterday going into a discussion about what the Democrats were going to wear, also I saw some people talking about the fact that Trump didn't wear a big red tie yesterday for the first time. What does that mean? And then it was all about that. I'm going to have to say it was silly. With the Democrats holding up these little cards and stuff like that that said, what, lie or not truth or something. All of this is just theater. I think, if I can remember my Shakespeare right, what is it? Shakespeare said, life is but a stage. And we were all but actors and actresses upon it. I think it was, I can't remember which Shakespeare it was or something like that. But that's, again, go back to it. It was interesting theater yesterday.
Which is why I didn't watch it, because not only was it not interesting theater, it was bad theater. Whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans, it's bad theater. Now, if you want to watch good theater, I suggest you watch Waitress. Thank you, David Schultz. Appreciate it. We'll come back, talk about tariffs. 6:30 time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. Quarter till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. It's President Trump from his speech last night to the joint session of Congress. And Robert Hanfield joins us now, professor of supply chain management at North Carolina State University. Good morning, professor. How are you?
Good morning. Pleasure to be here this morning.
What's going on with the fires there? Do you guys have some kind of fires going on? Is that in your area or not? We've been busy with Mardi Gras, and I just saw something on the news.
Yeah, we have some fires out in the western part of the state, which is really hitting that part of the state badly. We're recovering from the hurricane, and now they're getting hit by fires. It's really, really unfortunate.
And what about rain? Any shot at rain, or what's, are they having under containment? What's the situation? I know we didn't invite you on to talk about this, but I always express concern for where people live, just as they do for where we live.
Yes, of course. Well, thank you. And yeah, we did have a band of rain come through today, this morning, and I haven't checked whether it's had any impact on the fires, but hopefully it has.
Well, I hope so. I'm getting a lot of messages here in a political context. We have a text line about tariffs, and ultimately, it doesn't matter what I think, what the audience thinks, what you think about tariffs. If it's how I guess, foreign leaders, how they respond to tariffs and President Trump and what he does with tariffs and what we think doesn't matter. The results do affect us. So the president said there was going to be a little bit of inconvenience. But again, if you're a little inconvenience can be different to different people. If again, you got flat feet, for example. And you got to walk a mile, that's very inconvenient. If you got perfect feet, then a mile is no big deal. Tell me about tariffs.
Well, you know, I think the statement by the president that it'll be a little disturbance is, you know, vastly, underestimating the impact. Certainly, I think what we will see is that prices for groceries will go up almost immediately. I believe prices for gas will go up. Plastic polyethylene we source from Canada also will go up, so that will impact packaging. And then I also think for the average consumer, you know, it's going to really impact automobiles, which are, you know, their supply chain is tightly woven into that of Mexico and Canada. And so, you know, we could see prices go up by as much as $10,000 for a truck, for instance.
Well, let's face it, Professor, about $120,000 now. Who the hell can afford that anyway, right? May as well make it $130,000.
Yeah.
I say that tongue-in-cheek. But so there's going to be short-term effects and long-term effects as it relates to supply chain, right? Let's go back to the negotiate. Well, for people that don't understand, and I think everybody does by now, but just in case, a tariff is what? What happens when one country says, for example, President Trump says, that's it, I'm slapping tariffs on Canada and on Mexico, on this item, on that item. What happens from that point?
So what happens essentially is tariffs are a tax. It's a 25% tax of the value of that good as it crosses the border. The company, the shipping company or the manufacturer pays that tariff to the Customs and Border Patrol. Now, what they do, however, is they, you know, they can't just take 25% out of their profit margin, so they have to increase the price of that good. Now, in some cases, you know, like in China, the government might agree to cover that tariff, but that's very unlikely. And so for the most part, the price of those goods are going to go up. The seller may try to absorb some of that tariff, but for the most part, they just can't do it. And so essentially, it's the American consumer that will bear the brunt of those tariffs in the form of higher prices for the goods and services that they purchase that come from these countries. The other thing that people don't think about is what's called a retaliatory tariff. And this is where a country like China decides, oh, well, you tariff us, we're going to tariff you. And that's exactly what they've done. They've put tariffs on U.S. poultry, pork, soybeans, sorghum, and other goods. So I think that's really also going to impact demand for farmers in the United States.
Fox News interviewing a car dealer, David Kelleher, telling Fox Business that nobody's going to buy his Ram trucks. He said he sold $80,000 trucks to customers. Now it's $100,000, so they're not going to buy the truck. It's just going to sit on his lot. And you know, the higher interest rates we're paying now for floor plan. Nobody knows what floor plan is. I'll explain that in a second. Nobody's going to buy the truck because it just had a $20,000 price increase with the 25% tariff. What people understand about a car dealership is they don't own the cars that they sell. They pay finance charges on the cars that are sitting on the lot. That's what's called floor plan, and that enters into the price model, and that's why they have money invested into the cars that are on the lot. Sometimes they're more interested in selling than not, but that's a whole different segment on car buying. Professor, somebody texted in. You can address this when we come back, because I like to work the phone line, the text line in here, some of the questions.
Yeah.
Somebody says, if the cost of tariffs are only going to American consumer, then why are countries now wanting to negotiate? Somebody else said that the president said he was going to match their tariffs on us, so it's only fair if it's equal and eventually manufacturing will be back in the United States because that's what we need, so short-term pain for long-term gain. I think that's nice to say, but what people don't realize is the difference in labor and government-subsidized labor and how that would mean you could have manufacturing come back in the United States, but what that's going to mean is a lot higher prices for everything. We'll talk more when we come back. 651, 9 till 7, traffic now, WWL. All right, 657, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Professor Robert Handfield, a professor of supply chain management at North Carolina State University. Professor, text line, people saying that it's going to bring manufacturing back to the United States. Also, I look at this as tariff hold'em. I picture President Trump, the leader of Canada, the leader of Mexico, all at the poker table in Vegas. They got their caps pulled down, sunglasses on. They're playing tariff hold'em to see who blinks first, right, or who can outbluff whom. Tell me how this plays out, and then talk about bringing manufacturing back to the United States, please.
So yeah, I think you know, these retaliatory tariffs are sort of a who is going to blink first. As I said before the break, you know, I think this is really going to hurt farmers more than anyone else. You know, the tariffs on Chinese goods includes these retaliatory tariffs on soybeans, corn, wheat, pork, and chicken, and you know, we can grow more than enough for our domestic market. We're already self-reliant on food, and these farmers rely on that export market, and that's going to just kill them. As far as moving manufacturing back to the U.S., you know, Apple has been saying they're going to build a facility in the U.S. for the last 8 years. Nothing has happened. You know, it's one thing to say you're going to do it. It's another to actually do it. The people I've spoken with say it takes years and years, up to 5 to 10 years, to build and move manufacturing from China or anywhere else in the world to the U.S., and hundreds of millions of dollars. So it's not something where you can just snap your fingers and bring those jobs back.
And the Chinese subsidize the labor in their country, don't they? That's how they have an unfair advantage over the United States, and the Pacific Rim can work for a lot less than we can.
They can. Actually, Chinese labor costs have gone up. And ironically, the labor costs in Mexico are now lower than China. And so a lot of American companies have been moving production to Mexico. And there's good reasons for that. Mexico is nearby. The logistics costs are lower. And they're hardworking people. You know, the productivity is very high.
So we only have a minute here, Professor. I got to jump in with this. Who's holding the cards here when it comes to tariff hold'em? Who's likely to blink first? What's the end game here? Mexico, Canada, United States? Because if the farmers get hurt and we start paying them subsidies, that's the taxpayers that are paying the tariffs, right?
Oh, that's absolutely right. And, you know, I think the American consumer has to say something. That's who has to hold the cards. When we start feeling higher prices at the grocery store, at the pump, for our trucks, I think we have to write to our local senator or congressman and say, hey, these tariffs aren't working for me. You know, we need to do something about that. And that's the biggest way that you can react to these issues.
Thank you, Professor. I appreciate your time and your insight. Hope you come back on. Robert Handfield, and good luck with the fires, Professor of Supply Chain Management, North Carolina State University. We'll turn our attention to the French Quarter when we come back, WWL.